Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Alex Cooper. I'm here today with Walter Sullivan of Freddy Flaherty and Christopher Walsh of Marijuana Business Daily. So, Chris, tell us how you got started.
In Denver, when I had left, there were no medical marijuana dispensaries. There wasn't an industry. We weren't covering it at the newspaper I worked for. And when I came back 2 years later, there were more medical marijuana dispensaries in Denver than Starbucks. So I saw that as a fascinating turn of events, an industry that rose out of nowhere in 2 years. And two women from the mainstream business world had decided to start a trade publication for this industry, and they hired me to help launch it. And, you know, since then, you know, we've grown it into a, you know, daily news site, a printed magazine. We have business conferences, and we do market research.
Chris, it's amazing all the ancillary businesses that have been started from this industry. Lab testing,
yeah.
Magazines. Where do you see, you know, if you're advising someone, and maybe you can talk a little bit about the growth of the industry in Colorado and then somewhat of the collapse of some of the businesses. You know, from your perspective, what do you see that some people are doing right and some people are doing wrong?
Yeah, I mean, to your first question on the ancillary side of the industry, there is a, perhaps even the biggest part of the industry is the companies that are providing products and services to the businesses that are growing and selling the plant or to consumers. And I think a lot of business people initially view this industry just as growing marijuana and selling it, and that's where they think all the opportunities are. But they couldn't be more wrong. There are great opportunities there. They are very difficult and riskier than the opportunities for everything else, which is, you know, basically if you think of any product or service technology that is prevalent in a mainstream industry, the marijuana industry needs it as well, whether it's, you know, legal and consulting services, PR, marketing, advertising. You know, I came from mainstream business journalism. The founders of our company came from banking and marketing. You know, the list goes on and on. So there are a lot of people who have transitioned into this industry and are providing those types of services to the businesses in cannabis. And in general, though, to the second point, I mean, it's what you have a lot of people think this is a industry that will, you know, is paved with gold and you're going to make millions of dollars in a week or two. And that couldn't be further from the truth. There are a lot of successful companies, but there are a lot of companies that are struggling and that did not make it and that, you know, fell off the scene fairly quickly. It fizzled out. One of the things that defines who is successful and who is not, especially in the early days of starting a company in this industry, are those who do their due diligence. And it's amazing. That's a principle and a fundamental of business and entrepreneurship. But I've been shocked at the number of people, even savvy business people who come into this industry, think they know it all. Maybe they've been successful in another area of the business world, and they think they can just apply what they did here without doing their research, and they fall flat on their face. The marijuana industry is very complicated. It's very different than anything else out there. It's regulated completely differently by each state, and each city handles it differently. And so that's the number one mistake I see people make, is that they don't do their due diligence. The other is that they don't prepare for and adapt to fluctuations and changes. This is not a mature, stable industry. Things change very, very quickly, sometimes on a daily basis. And companies that cannot and executives that cannot adapt to that also find themselves far behind. And sometimes that means changing your business model or mixing up how you do things. Other times it means making sure you have enough money to weather certain storms that arise that you didn't expect. So there's undercapitalized businesses that are just unable to deal with a fluctuation in the regulatory environment, or when there's an announcement from the federal government that, you know, kind of sends a panic through the industry. There are people who can't ride that out. So those are some of the biggest mistakes that I've seen people make.
You talk about the federal government a minute. I mean, one of the things, you know, two things. One, session starting in December on trying to get Congress to get rid of the continuing resolution language that doesn't allow the federal government to use funds in legalize states to investigate and prosecute marijuana cases, and then the most recent getting rid of the Cole memorandum that had a ripple effect on the Treasury's memo as well. What do you really see that? Do you see it more as a fear than a reality?
I mean, there are reasons to be somewhat fearful about some of these moves that under the Trump administration. You have a very anti-marijuana person who is running the DOJ, which is responsible for marijuana policy. So the fears are understandable when you have someone who is basing his opinions on marijuana, from whatever he felt in the 1960s and hasn't even tried to update his opinions based on anything in reality. So there's that natural fear, which is understandable. However, you have an industry that has risen very quickly. It has done so under constant change and constant threats of it being shut down and of businesses being closed, and in the early days, people, executives even being sent to jail was a risk. So it survived all of them. It's thrived all under all of them, and you have this growing, huge surge of favorable public opinion, both for the legalization of medical marijuana, which is now well above 80% nationally in red and blue states, in polls done by anti-marijuana groups and pro-marijuana groups. It doesn't matter. Support is medical marijuana legalization, and for recreational marijuana legalization, it is well over 50% now. So, you know, when you look at the base level opinions and attitudes towards marijuana, you look at the trends with new states legalizing recreational marijuana, even in the South, and you look at the businesses created by this industry. You know, 200,000 plus people employed by it. $6 billion in retail sales, according to our estimates, numbers that are set to triple. And you look at all the tax dollars flowing into states, it doesn't seem feasible that the federal government could do much to the industry. It could slow the growth down. It could cause a chilling effect in certain ways. But I can't reasonably see how the federal government, with its lack of resources, can turn back the clock. So I think that's why people in the industry are still mostly optimistic, even when you see, you know, Sessions kind of rolling his Civil War sword, threatening to take on the industry.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you find in this is talking to some cultivators, dispensary owners, is that a number of the people they have employed, actually 50% or so, were actually unemployed before. It's an amazing job creation that that for many states need them.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, there's well over 200,000 people employed by this industry, and it could be even much higher. That number is from a year ago in our last market research. We're in the middle of doing our next massive report, so and those numbers have increased. So it's a major job generator. You have, Colorado bringing in, for example, over $100 million in tax revenue from the industry. I mean, that's a lot of money, and that is being used not only for enforcement of the current laws tied to marijuana and education programs and substance abuse programs, but also for schools and other projects that benefit communities. So, it's hard, especially when you have an administration led by a president who is all about business and jobs. It would be completely going the opposite direction to crack down on this industry. I mean, there are tens of thousands of companies in this industry, and not only are they employing people that were unemployed before, a lot of them are employing really high-level professionals now and people that are coming from the mainstream business and government world. I mean, some of these companies are employing ex-DA agents, former politicians. They're run by people who have built giant companies in other industries. These people, a lot of them are wearing suits and ties to work every day. I mean, this is a mainstream, legit industry.
Well, I think you find that true. The company that started out, I know how to grow. I'm going to apply for a license. Hey, that's great. Well, try to get an investor because you don't know how to run a company. And you see a lot of these people that applied, actually investors making them bring in professional people to run the business. And everyone succeeds that way.
Yeah,
and I think that becomes a big difference in how some of these people are looking at it.
Right, and you've seen an evolution of the industry. When we first started our company in 2011, it wasn't out of the ordinary to see a dispensary owner, you know, wearing shorts and potentially stoned on the job in some states. What you found now is that there were pioneers who took these big risks, who maybe were growing in their basement, have been really closely associated with marijuana their entire lives. Those were the first wave of people that started these businesses, and it's easy to make fun of them and stereotype them, but they took the big risks and they paved the way for the industry today. And is what you've seen along the way is that it has become, you know, much more professional. You have business savvy people coming in. Those days are largely over, except for in a few pockets of the country where the regulations are light, of, you know, having kind of the stereotypical pothead, you know, running a business. And I'm not saying that negatively again, but now you have the professional side. The industry needs that. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, the people who built it are increasingly kind of getting pushed out. The mom and pops are going away because it's mirroring every other industry out there where the bigger companies, the well-funded businesses are able to scale and take advantage of the situation. But on the other hand, the benefits are that it is much more palatable for the public, and it's more mainstream and legitimate. And the industry needed regulations and needed responsible business people running these companies.
I think you see and you guys just reported this past week regarding the push against some of the smaller growers in California now complaining, feeling they're being pushed out. Massachusetts created a cultivation co-op type of license for the guys that used to do this in their basement and micro, so they can still survive in the business, and the big guys can still make it as well. I think there's room in this industry for both, for craft growers as well as big businesses. But the bottom line is you have to know how to run a business, whether it's a small business or a big business, to make it to survive in this industry.
Yeah, and it didn't used to be that way, but you know, it is now. And you know, on some hand, you have to feel for the growers in California who've been doing this for 15 years in fields in the northern part of the state. But on the other hand, they are not really running responsible, regulated businesses. And you know, this is still a drug with a plant with a huge stigma around it. So you know, it needs that legitimacy and it needs controls on the industry. And so, to your point, there is room for both the small players and, you know, the people that were maybe growing in their basement for a long time. They can still find a way into the industry, as well as the, you know, big giant companies that will reach economies of scale and mass produce and sell cannabis and related products.
Well, I think when you find, you kind of brought up some of the lightly regulated states. What I found interesting was the way California rolled out its recreational program, somewhat, you know, pushing it out there and saying we'll deal with the regulations later and be more sophisticated, and then soon thereafter Sessions getting rid of the Cole Memorandum, versus looking at states like Massachusetts that are working hard and rolling out a highly regulated industry, looking to control it, looking to cover social costs, looking to address the economic disparity the drug wars had on certain parts of the state and individuals, and then along with, you know, the revenues that can be made. How would you look at someone in this business? You know, what state should they be looking at in order to do this, stay in their own states? How would you actually advise someone looking to get into this business?
Yeah, you brought up a good point. It's funny, California and Massachusetts are extreme polar opposites of how they've handled you know, the marijuana industry. California has not traditionally had statewide regulations on its medical marijuana industry, so it's really the Wild West out there, where you had a lot of businesses that just, you know, were operating without any regulations. People were opening up dispensaries in L.A. and they didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to have security, meet security requirements or any of that. And in Massachusetts, it's very highly regulated, both the medical and recreational. So there's downsides in both. California has been way too loose and became a pariah in the industry because of lack of regulations. And Massachusetts has become an example of it being too strict and too difficult, you know, because of how the officials there have treated it. It has really no solid advocates in the in Massachusetts in the halls of power who are pushing the industry along. So Massachusetts is not a great opportunity right now at this second for entrepreneurs. It will be if the recreational program rolls out and things smooth out and the state really gets behind it, like you've seen in all these other states. You know, Colorado and California and Nevada and Oregon, they were really behind this. They really helped push it forward because they said this is what our voters wanted. And even if we don't agree with it, we're going to do this responsibly, but in an ideal time frame. And Massachusetts has not taken that. It's just erring on the side of caution, and it feels like people have been dragging their feet on purpose. So depending on how this rolls out, Massachusetts has an enormous potential market for recreational marijuana and could provide some tremendous business opportunities. We see it as a major player, but we don't know yet how it's going to shake out there because of the slowness and the dragging of heels there on regulators and officials' part. When you look at the landscape in the U.S., I mean, California is a fantastic opportunity right now. You know, it's the biggest state in the nation by far with, you know, 40 million people. It's a hub of innovation and investment and business in general. And so there's a lot of supporting industries there that could really help take this to the next level. There are going to be lots of opportunities there. And so that I would say is a big one. Then you do have some saturated markets, though, that are not really good. Like Colorado is not a great place to start a new company right now in the marijuana industry, especially if you're touching the plant, if you're growing, processing, or selling marijuana. And I think that when you go forward, people should also start thinking internationally. There are, you know, Canada is legalizing recreational marijuana federally this year, in just a couple months, this summer. The country is going to legalize recreational marijuana at the federal level. They won't have the same challenges you face here. There are publicly traded medical marijuana companies up there that are landing hundreds of millions of dollars and have market caps in the billions. They are doing business across the globe. They are exporting marijuana. They are setting up production facilities in South America and in Europe and in Australia. And the U.S. is falling behind because the rest of the world is moving forward at the federal level with at least medical marijuana legalization. And here we are in the U.S. with the head of the DOJ, you know, again saying, oh, this is really dangerous and it's just ludicrous. And so the U.S. is falling behind. So I would encourage people not only to look in the U.S., but to look abroad, because that's really the big story coming up is the development of a global market.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at what, you know, what DOJ is doing, it's not based on any scientific evidence or so forth as to what the, as what they see. In fact, all the scientific evidence goes the other way, that marijuana is actually probably less harmful than alcohol, if not actually less harmful than alcohol. And it's clearly not a gateway drug. In fact, on the medical side, it has made an incredible difference in states relative to the opiate problem. Drastic reductions.
Yeah, if anyone is trying to make an argument these days that medical marijuana should be outlawed and is not helpful, has no medical value, well, they are just not in touch with reality and not willing to look at things remotely objectively. I mean, on the medical side, it is really difficult to make a case that it should be illegal. I mean, there are, you know, countless patients. You're talking into the millions, you know, in the U.S. and Canada and around the world who are using it and they're finding relief. And you can't ignore that. It's not 20-year-olds claiming they have back pain. These are 70, 80, 90-year-olds with cancer and, you know, glaucoma and chronic pain that are benefiting from this. And, you know, we're all worried about, you know, medical marijuana. You're not seeing any research that finds that, you know, it's addictive and it's a harmful medication and you can overdose and die on it. Well, guess what you can do all that on? All the things that are prescribed at your doctor's office every day, you know, particularly the opiates. So I think that, you know, on the medical side, it's very hard to defend that position. On the recreational side, I still get it. I mean, people are, some people don't think it should be legal. They think it's harmful. Jury's still out in some ways, but if you were to do an honest assessment between marijuana and alcohol, there is just no comparison. And, you know, I'm a guy, I drink beer, I like beer. you know, that's my thing.
Well, you're from Colorado.
Yeah, well,
you have the Rockies.
Marijuana now. yeah, right. But you know, I'm a beer guy, and I'm not a marijuana guy. And I think that when I look objectively, alcohol is way more damaging to health, to society, to communities, to families. So there's just no comparison, and no one's saying anything about alcohol. Jeff Sessions isn't outraged at anything happening with alcohol right now. So it just makes absolutely no sense when you look at it objectively.
So when you look, you're looking 5 years, 10 years out, the medical side tends to be vertically integrated in a lot of states. The rec side, in Massachusetts and other states, is that you have to choose. And you can hold all three licenses, cultivate, manufacture, or sell. As you look at this, for small investment, what is the best part of the tier to get involved in that you could survive past 5 years?
Well, it's hard to make a sweeping pronouncement because it's really going to everything, and any investor should know that the industry is so different by state, and as I mentioned before, even city, that you cannot draw any overarching conclusions about the whole industry. You really have to look at the state's market. The regulatory models are completely different, where in some states there might only be 5 allowable businesses that can be licensed to produce and sell marijuana, and they have to handle the entire supply chain. As you mentioned, that's vertically integrated. In other states, there's no caps, and there might be hundreds. And in other states, they might be mature, or in others, they might be only able to sell certain types of marijuana. In some states, you can't sell marijuana that's smokable. You can only sell it in like pills and oils. In other states, they don't allow the big part of the industry now, the edibles, the infused candies and baked goods. So it's really hard to draw a big paintbrush and say, here's the great opportunities, here's the not-so-great ones. But in general, I can say, overall, the cultivation, the growing side of marijuana is going to face some significant challenges down the road. It's going to become more of a commodity. You are already seeing the emergence of massive cultivation operations in some states that are, you know, realizing economies of scale and are churning out huge amounts of marijuana, and that's hard to compete with, and that's driving prices down and putting the smaller guys out of business. Again, not every market. In other states, it's way more controlled, and that's not the case. But in general, that's what you're seeing in the recreational market so far. So that's challenging. I mean, we're hoping that there will be room for the small craft growers, as you mentioned before, as well as the big guys. But we'll see how that all plays out. There will be demand for the kind of top-notch, high-end cannabis that's handcrafted or whatever. But how big that market will ultimately be down the road, we don't know. The retail side, there will be opportunities, just like in cultivation, for some very, very big companies to develop. The Starbucks, McDonald's, the Burger Kings of cannabis. But there won't be a ton of those. In Colorado, is kind of what you're seeing, where this industry could go as a whole, where you have an open market, so there's hundreds of companies, hundreds of retailers, hundreds of infused products companies, hundreds of growing companies, but you're starting to see consolidation on the retail side. So you're seeing big chains develop where they have 20, 30 stores, but you're also seeing them gobbling up the weaker competitors or those who want to exit or those who can't survive. So eventually in a state like Colorado, you will probably see, and potentially Massachusetts and California and everywhere, you might only see, 5, 6, 7 big chains and then a handful of mom and pops. That'll be a tough part of the industry too.
So let me ask this from a local community perspective. And this, so when Massachusetts first started the medical marijuana program, it was a beauty contest. 181 applicants applied. They whittled it down to 20. Then politics came into play. Everything hit the fan. They only awarded 11. They're up to 18 that they awarded in the first round. Only 17 places are open since 2012 that are actually open. Shows you how bad the program took off. one of the things you find, let me finish the thought first, I apologize, is that when Governor Baker came in, he made it market-driven. You'll let the market drive where it is, like a CVS or anything else. And I think what you find in, I don't know if you found this in Colorado, is that because of fear of local communities allowing them in, that applicants are just piling up on top of people of one another in communities that will take them. And it does a job on the market. With all your years of experience in this, how would you advise local communities what real fears are versus perceived fears, and what the benefit and risk are allowing marijuana into your community?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, the Massachusetts experience so far has been in medical, and as you mentioned, it has been very difficult. I see medical slightly different than recreational. Do you want me to focus on one or quickly go over both?
Oh, actually both, because I think, especially in Massachusetts, both play out the same way almost.
Okay. So on the medical side, there are almost no downsides, and I would advise communities to look to the experience in other medical marijuana states, including many of Massachusetts' neighbors. You find that if the program is well-regulated, which I think Massachusetts, if anything, is over-regulated, so you get an A-plus there in terms of regulations, there's enough regulations there that these dispensaries and grow operations should blend into the landscape, and they look like any other business, despite what's going on the inside. It's just a plant that someone's growing and then processing and selling. And on the medical side, you find that the average age in most of these states of patients is in their 50s and 60s. Again, some younger people can get it, some validly, and some coerce a doctor to give it them a recommendation, even though they shouldn't. But in general, these are patients, especially in a state like Massachusetts. And the businesses are very well run because they have to be. They have to meet all these regulations. They need that kind of savviness and experience of the people operating it. There's security everywhere. I mean, you don't hear of huge crime problems around these operations in other states. You just don't. I mean, you'd be stupid to rob a dispensary because of all the cameras and security precautions that are baked into the regulations. People will walk into these, and they're often more like clinics. They feel like a clinic or a high-end business, not a dumpy, seedy operation. So there are really almost no downsides, and what you find is a lot of these businesses are friends of the community. And in some cases, they're reaching out, they're developing relationships, they're donating, they're volunteering their time. And again, they are helping people who need it medically. So honestly, I can say completely objectively, there are very, very few downsides for a community letting medical marijuana operations in as long as it's under a strict regulatory program like you have in Massachusetts. Without regulations, it's a different story, or with light regulations, but that's not the case in Massachusetts. With recreational, is what I can say is that the communities that ban it should really rethink it in 6 months or a year and see how it's going in other cities, because they're going to be leaving a lot of money on the table. They're going to be preventing a lot of new jobs and startups from existing and materializing. In Colorado, our second largest city, Colorado Springs, still doesn't allow recreational marijuana, for instance. It's a notoriously more conservative area of the state. Meanwhile, hey, in Denver, guess what? Business is booming. And so there are downsides, sure. It's something else people can do. They can go buy marijuana, and so people don't like that. I mean, there are probably more people driving around who have had marijuana and maybe shouldn't be operating a car. We don't really see statistics that in any of these states that show there's been any noticeable spike in anything. But there are concerns. You go to the ski areas and marijuana, you can smell a little bit more because the tourists. I'll tell you, though, I went to Boston 2 years ago, and I smelt more marijuana there than I ever did in Denver. And
I was just
going to
ask you that question.
Yeah. So, but the downsides are, I'm not going to pretend there aren't any. I'm sure some people are over-consuming and maybe, losing their job because they're lazy. I don't know, just like they do with any other substance. I'm not going to paint a 100% rosy picture, but for communities, you need to look at this, at the bigger picture, put in the safeguards you think are necessary, but give it a chance because, you know, here, I'll give you one example. In Colorado, one of the towns down south called Pueblo had a chance to vote because of some officials who put on the ballot recently to ban the recreational marijuana business. They have allowed it up there in their operations, but a couple people said, well, we don't want it here. That measure went to voters and it failed. So several years after recreational marijuana had been allowed there, the measure failed. And if there were a lot of downsides, you can absolutely bet the public would have voted to ban the industry. Denver voted to allow social clubs where you can consume in a business if it, you know, follows all these safeguards. The population of Denver wouldn't vote that way if this industry was bad. You know, I mean, so we've seen this play out, and you rarely hear criticisms of the industry. The last thing I'll say on this is that when you look at the fastest growing states and cities in this country, guess what's on there? Denver, Seattle, Portland, all of which were the first to legalize recreational marijuana. If the quality of life was terrible, people wouldn't be moving there. If there was a huge crime wave, people wouldn't be moving there. The industry is creating jobs. It's supporting the local economy. And guess what? The public now, more people in the public support this. So, you know, they don't mind if other people, you know, are consuming marijuana every now and then.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned social clubs. In Massachusetts, the law does not, in and of itself, talk about social clubs. But it allowed the commission to create a social social business license. And part of the reason the commission did it was they looked at it saying, here we are, we're allowing rec, but we're not giving people any place to go to smoke it or to use it. And they said, that's kind of crazy. We really should be focusing on that too. And it creates a whole other industry. We have a license for just a regular type of social consumption place. We also have created a mixed-use license that for yoga studios or some other type of dance studios to allow marijuana to be included as part of their offering. And I think that makes an incredible difference in moving the industry forward. You have something coming up in May that's a pretty big deal in New Orleans. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, we have MJ BizCon next. We've been doing a spring show for a while. This is we kind of re-envisioned it. So this is basically a show that is going to be in New Orleans. Louisiana has legalized medical marijuana, obviously a fun city, but also the South has kind of broken through finally in marijuana legalization. You know, Florida legalized, Arkansas on medical marijuana. So we're basing it there. It's a national show. But yeah, it's a business trade show. I mean, this is suits and ties, you know, and technology and legal and grow lighting equipment companies on the exhibit floor. And we're going to have a couple thousand people there, and we're going to focus the educational portion on basically your first 2 years in business. You know, what are the considerations from winning a license to launching your marijuana business? What are the issues and costs you experience in your first 2 years of business? Those are the things we're focusing on. So like a lot of people in Massachusetts right now, it's that kind of a market. And then we also have a higher-end executive summit tied to that, and we have some VIP, like, you know, top grower, and head extraction roundtables for more advanced people. But to give you an idea of how mainstream this industry is becoming, I mean, our keynote for this is Kevin O'Leary, who's, you know, the uber wealthy businessman who's on Shark Tank and has, you know, created and sold some big businesses for a big profit. And
wow.
And we've lined him up, and he's actually really excited to speak at this industry event. So, yeah, that's our next big one. We also have an international one in Toronto in August, our first international show. So this industry is growing very quickly.
Do you want to give our listeners some information on how to get to register for the for either show?
Yeah, if you just go to Marijuana Business Daily or mjbizdaily.com, you can find a link to our conference there and our different conferences and our market research and our news and analysis and our magazine and Again, it's not just about the conference. We're here to basically help people get into the industry, help people survive challenges, help them thrive in the industry. We're really focused on business and investing. So, you can get to everything we do at marijuanabusinessdaily.com.
That is great. Alex, this was an amazing show.
Yes, it was. A lot of information to digest.
Talk about your knowledge. It's just tremendous.
Oh, well, thank you for having me on. It's really fascinating. I'm really shocked at where the industry's come in 7 years since we started. Never thought it would be where it is.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Walter. Now that we're off the record, I'll say I remember when Ann started this. I was like, wow, she's a visionary.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah, she. I mean, and talk about one of the few real areas you could be a visionary in the last, decade. No one was doing what we were doing when she started this. And I mean, she's not a marijuana person, so for her to see it as a pure business opportunity and recognize it way back then was pretty amazing.
Chris, now that we're off the record, I was going to ask you earlier, what happened to Mindful? Meg Standis is now in Massachusetts.
Yeah, Mindful's still around, and she's still affiliated with them in some capacity, but yeah, I think she gave up part of her equity and wanted to go in a different direction. I haven't talked to her actually in a while, so I'm not sure. I don't think the company didn't fold or anything, I think.
Oh, no, it's still existing. I just think a lot of the investors were from Mass, but she was growing a consulting business as well. Her partner's from Connecticut, but she's now up here running Revolutionary.
Right. Oh, that's right. I forgot that's what she was doing. What you're seeing is a lot of these pioneers like Meg right now are kind of either pivoting or getting out. These people have been working really hard for the last 7-8 years. This is a crazy industry. I've never been around anything like it in the hours you have to put in. I think she was just looking for something, a new challenge, and maybe saw a brighter opportunity than just being in that kind of mainly on the retail side, just in Denver.
Right. I think she's not involved in the daily anymore, but she's now running the daily operation up here for a company.
Uh-huh. Right. I do think Massachusetts is going to be a big market. People need to get off their butts up there and help the industry along instead of fighting it,
The commissioners, the Cannabis Control Commission is now doing such an amazing job trying to make it in time. The medical marijuana rollout, especially the first part of it, and still today, I'd argue, it's still a nightmare. There's no way that we should only have 17 dispensaries up and running, and who knows how many sitting in provisional stage. They somewhat say it's about financing. It's really about the local and the state not moving quick enough and investors pulling out because they just can't stay in the game any longer.
And what you find is that if the state has an interest in moving it along, again, even if some officials don't agree, but they say, look, we're under the mandate from the people, we're going to roll this out responsibly, but in a good timeline, you will find the communities move faster too. They're taking their cues from the state. So when you have the state kind of, slouching on this and dragging its feet, that's what happens it's kind of like leadership from the top. They set the tone, and the other communities, then they're a little hesitant, and they take their time to approve, et cetera.
Well, and I think Vermont, even after Sessions' announcement, their legislature legalized rec.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I wish they had a business element for that. But the downside for Massachusetts is that the U.S. attorney just said, I won't guarantee I won't prosecute, companies operating under the law. That's not a great thing either, but.
It's funny, you can tell a friend of mine used to be the first assistant there, so the U.S. attorney worked for him, and I called him about him. He said, look, nice guy. He said, don't bother calling him. He said, on a big issue like this, it's all being run out of D.C. And you can tell from his comments, he won't meet with the commission, and he's just, I think what he's basically saying, without saying it, is that if you're operating close to the line or outside the line, I'm coming after you. My big focus is opiate gangs and so forth. But I think that's what you saw in the Obama administration in California and others. Yeah. They were trying to shut down the businesses that were operating outside the line are too close to schools and say, hey, either move or we're coming after you.
And I don't have any problem with that at all. I mean, and that should happen, to tell you the truth. I mean, the people violating the state laws should be targeted. I agree. And actually, I think that's good for the industry because
it
weeds out the bad players and makes it more responsible in general.
And I think that's one thing you find is that if you're running a good business, you want to be in a highly regulated industry because you don't want the guys that are going to cut corners to be able to come in here, whether you're bringing marijuana in the back door or whatever, you know, in order to get a better margin. You don't want that because you are operating your business professionally and within the law. You want to make sure you have tough regulators.
Yep, exactly.
So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. It was wonderful.